Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck. I forgot.
Stay with me, George. I need you here. There's lots to get to. We've got polling around the federal liberals that'll be mind-blowing for many. But talk about mind-blowing. It feels like the first 100 days, and it hasn't even been the first week of the presidency of Donald Trump. Yeah, he's back again and with a force. We'll get into all of that and more.
Around the world we go on Unspun.
But let's start in Canada, George. Come on. The polling for the federal liberals, if you had been told that these would be the polling numbers at this point, it, having been, what, 30 points down not that long ago?
A month ago.
Right? And now they're what?
I think they're within 7 points to Axios. Axiom poll, I think, came out today for the monthly poll.
Yeah.
Seven points. So they're set to, at that number to actually... potentially, and working with the NDP, get another minority, because who are the Conservatives going to align themselves with? Maybe the Bloc, but it looks like this is the Trump effect in Canada. I mean, you saw some other data this week about 85% of Canadians support tariffs and retaliatory tariffs against U.S. This is like that's huge, and that's a statement about how we feel about Trump. I know we have a lot of Trump supporters who listen to the show.
Sure.
And this is not us slamming Trump. This is just talking about the numbers. And, he's obviously, from my point of view as a former politician, it's getting stuff done is great, and making your agenda clear and doing all those things. And he's certainly doing that. And they voted for him and all that stuff. But here in Canada, the effect of Trump has given now the fact that there's 85% of Canadians support retaliatory tariffs, except for Alberta. And now we have the Liberals coming back. And Trudeau's probably going, you see, you should have just kept me. I told you.
It is wild that we are living in such turbulent times on an international scale and such uncertainty within our country. Like it's really quite something. And then, so staying engaged locally is really important. And we'll get to local, like hyper-local, Metro Vancouver, British Columbia, etc. in a minute. But sticking, local Canadian, like I feel a very strong pull for Canadians to stand together at a time where over the last number of years we've been quite divided. I mean, not as divided as the United States, but there has been a level of divisiveness that I've never experienced before in my 57 years as a Canadian. So that's something. Further to that, I've been like tuned into Canadian news and reading everything I can. Reputable news sources obviously are important, more so than ever before. But I was watching CBC News Network yesterday morning, and Ontario Premier Doug Ford was holding a press conference, and he was talking about the importance of standing together as Canadians. And, and he referenced, back in the pandemic in 2020, and he did take a shot at the Liberal government in saying, with N95 masks, why were we buying them from the United States? Why wouldn't we buy those when Trump was literally holding them back and creating a situation where we had supply chain issues with those masks, as we can all remember? Now we don't have that issue anymore. We need to look within our country and do the buy Canadian and Canadian made. I sat there, and George, I got to say, and again, to the Doug Fords or such supporters out there, I don't think I can remember a time where I've agreed with him. And I was sitting there just nodding my head. And I posted a clip of him saying that. And I threw it out there like, buy Canadian. And honestly, George, that tweet of mine has 400,000 views.
Yes. Along with your announcement about doing the show.
We'll get to that at the end.
And Doug Ford, of course, has an election coming up. And
yes,
I'm sure this is doing well for him. It's really interesting. I'm very Canadian. We've backpacked in Europe. And if you're Canadian, when you're traveling, you're proudly Canadian.
Like that patch on my shoulder.
Exactly.
You betcha. Backpack, exactly. Canadian flag. 100%.
I think that's coming back. Several years, people have been more laissez-faire about being Canadian. And I think we should be proud. We are one of the certainly the one of the wealthiest countries in the world, the best, one of the best top for as long as you can remember. People don't know this. We have one of the best GDPs in the world, in the Western, of the G20. We're always top five or six, always. Sometimes we've never been number one, I don't think, not in at least this last 4 years.
Doesn't matter.
Generally second, third, fifth, sixth, somewhere in there. That's pretty good.
That's the thing about being Canadian, though, George. We're number one. We're really solid, right? In 2008, when everybody was like losing it and losing a lot. I mean, both at the time I was married, and both my husband and I found ourselves in a situation where it's like, we don't have the jobs we've had for the last 10 years anymore, right? Like our contracts were like, no thanks. And so we had to reestablish ourselves. And if not for the stability of our housing market, where it was collapsing on a global scale, like it was, we as a country really navigated our way through that. And I think that is resonating with Canadians when it comes back to this polling, because they're looking at the possibility of a Mark Carney, the possibility is Carney, Freeland, and who are the front runners, right? Carina Gould, Gould, right? So Carina Gould is 37, and many people are saying that Carina Gould is definitely putting herself in a position to be a future leader, perhaps not in this moment. Maybe she is. Maybe the youth vote comes out and says, yeah, we need to get rid of these old people and whatever. However.
And she wears glasses. So, you know, we like that.
I mean, right there, she's smarter than most everybody else. but I think it's really worth noting, and while I am certainly no expert on Mark Carney, I do know that he was Bank of Canada. He was, you know, through some really turbulent times for this country. He has had that experience. And I think that's resonating with people who are looking across the aisle at somebody who has definitely got branding and bluster and hitting the hot button issues and wedge issues in Pierre Poilievre, who could go mano a mano. I hate to say that because Chrystia Freeland is certainly not to be counted out, but she also has been the number one right arm soldier of Justin Trudeau's for the last 9 years. So that might be a turnoff for the voter. So
it's interesting, this debate about how to manage Donald Trump, how to work with Donald Trump.
Right.
I don't think there's this whole thing, you got to be, you know, fight fire with, you know, be like Trump to beat Trump. I don't know. I think you have to be cunning, and I think you have to be strategic, but I don't think you have to be Trump to beat Trump. And I think that a calm approach is probably, which is a very Canadian approach, could be a very effective. You know, what do you want? It's negotiation. That's all it is to him. That's all it is to him. And we know they're 10 times bigger than us. And if he wants to be and invade us, like, we'll put up a fight. But, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. You know, it's but let's be realistic. What he wants is some key things, and he wants a better deal. And, you know, and he's going to discover, I think, pretty quickly that his insular strategy of, you know, building a wall around his entire country is really ineffective way to manage an economy. It just doesn't, there's no historical evidence that works, certainly in the long term. And, you know, short term, maybe it'll work, but it's going to creating chaos is not a great way to run the country, but that's Donald Trump. So,
I like, Carney, to your point, can I jump in right there real quick? Because I want to jump off one of the things you said there, you know, as opposed to, you know, meeting him with the same tone or, you know, being strategic about how you address somebody who works in a world of chaos. He has upended norms, political norms. That's not a surprise. We've seen 4 years of this before. So is it scary? Of course it is. Does it create, you know, nervousness within the Canadian business community? Obviously it would. He's being very specific. We're going to build cars here. We're going to use our own oil. We're going to use our own forests. Those are the things that he said at Davos earlier today. We, you know, Canada is running at a huge deficit. They owe us all this money. And, you know, he's like throwing out these platitudes that he believes are like cover it all, which they obviously do not. There's huge trade that goes back and forth between Canada and the U.S. to the benefit of both countries in various lanes and markets, however you want to put it, in various products and various services. You know, it's been a partnership give and take situation that cannot be, you know, discounted in one line by this president. But it's interesting to me to watch Canadian premiers reacting to that and the idea of having a Team Canada approach. I hope that there is less, what do they call it when you're giving away your strategy? Telegraphing? What is it? I hope there's fewer press releases about how we're going to push back on, like, stop having announcements about it and make an actual plan. Be ready for when he does do the thing that he keeps threatening, which, by the way, he's been threatening forever. Wait for the threat to actually become action and then respond to it. Pearl clutching, freaking out, talking about it. What are we going to do? It is a nonstop news cycle, and it's not helping anybody.
Well, it's helping the politicians, obviously, because so it's, you know, we talk about our shows on Spun, and this is about spin. This is about them leveraging the opportunity to say, hey, we're standing for Canada. But meanwhile, in Alberta, Daniel Smith is saying, you know, I'm going a different route. And you know, I see, having been in that situation where I'm the only one yelling and screaming one thing, and turns out I was right, by the way, on a lot of things, when I was in office, you know, I get her, you know, I think it's good to have dissenting voices and maybe, you know, to listen to her arguments and think about that. And she is talking about, hey, this is a negotiation, everybody. Let's not, just like you're saying, don't throw everything at them, right? Like, we don't have anything on the table to negotiate. And so to say we're going to retaliate when we don't even know what we're retaliating against is kind of ridiculous. But what was interesting this week also was the First Nations coming out saying we had to start building some pipelines and start building some refineries in Canada. Against there, you know, the whole issue where they were blockading these things a few years ago.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah. Times are different now. And you're going, this is the issue that I have argued for why we need to have this stuff in Canada for as long as I've been in publicly saying our economy is built on our oil and gas industry. It really is. And to deny that denies all the other things that we get in Canada. So this is a wake-up call from Trump, care of Trump, to Canadians that you can't have an economy without the oil and gas industry. And I'm not saying drill, baby, drill like Trump is, but I'm saying we need to look at how our economy works and not rely on one partner. BC benefits because we don't rely on US as much as other provinces. And that gives us a little bit more stability, but it's still going to impact us. It's just an interesting situation where you see people finally wake up to things that I've been, and many people have been saying for years, that look, we understand the environmental impact. We understand you're going through your nation or whatever, or your neighborhood or whatever it might be. But you have to also understand the macro issue here, the economy and what makes up Canada. How do we have universal health care? How do we have some of the best cities? How do we have one of the best economies? How do we have all this? Well, I'm sorry to tell you, it's mostly because of the oil and gas industry. It really is. It really is. And it's really interesting that this is a wake-up call. It just so happens that most of our, you know, customers are in the U.S., which is geographically obvious. But we need to
also
look at the whole
to
world.
Note, though, George, is that right now this conversation could go on for hours, but simply put, while there are obvious reasons to pivot from fossil fuels, look at the climate emergency.
Yeah.
However, the natural resources that is, as you point out, so incredibly valued and valuable in our country, without having a way to get those natural resources to Europe and Asia, right now, it's all heading in its raw form down to the U.S. to be processed for us to buy back at a higher amount with a lower dollar.
Right.
So if we just start looking at things, and, you know, Daniel Smith's point to Rob Ford of saying, you know, I'm not publicly saying that we should put a massive tariff specifically on car parts, because, of course, that's the big industry in Ontario, or speaking about, you know, the big industries that are associated with Quebec or for British Columbia. The truth of the matter is, of all of our exports, to your point, the greatest threat is that of the oil and gas tariffs, because that will immediately impact American citizens at the pump, which was enough of a kitchen table issue to get Donald Trump elected in the first place, because it was gas prices, housing, and the cost of groceries. That is apparently why 75 million people in the United States voted for Donald Trump. It was kitchen table issues that the Democrats weren't focused enough on.
A final point on that, because if you listen to New York Times podcast, The Daily today, they talked about the oil and gas industry in the States. And right now, because Trump's saying drill, baby, drill, they've never produced more oil in their own country than they ever have before. They're producing more oil, pumping out more oil and gas in U.S. than they ever have. And the rate is a fairly good average rate. It's sort of in the $70 a barrel or so. So it's actually perfectly, so the only reason he's doing it is for PR. It's for negotiation and spin and, you know, doing, but it's not based on actual facts. Unlike George facts, selling, which are based on actual facts.
Meanwhile, selling meme coins, you know, making
that's a grift.
Crazy dollars on grifts that can't even, I mean, there's, like I said, the upended nature of political norms. It's wild to me and very quiet in the United States when it comes to Republicans who are more centrist Republicans or just fiscal Republicans, you know, watching, pulling out of the World Health Organization, you know, taking away all grants and funding for science and research and grants. This is like, wow.
The EV program is dead as of today.
And the DEI, everybody on any diversity and equity programs, everybody was put on administrative leave pending firing. Like blankets of people. It's wild. Let's bring it back. It is. It's, I mean, no shortage of things to talk about. I'm looking forward to a slow news day sometime in our lifetime. Let's bring it back to BC and seeing, how do you assess how our premier has positioned our province when it comes to the Canada First and addressing the possibility of incoming tariffs from the U.S. up to 25% as of February 1st?
I noticed since maybe he was listening to our podcast last week, but because I was saying he wasn't particularly aggressive and he was kind of sort of a hidden one of the premiers, but he's come out quite aggressive this week. Talking about beer and wine, I think, and booze. And
doing what
Ontario.
Pulling off the Tennessee whiskey. There'd be no more Jack Daniels.
No more Jack Daniels. Like, I it's funny because, you know, alcohol consumption is way down. So, like, you know, my kids, they don't drink. Like, nobody drinks anymore. Like, I do. Hey.
But you and me are making up for our kids.
That's right. I don't drink Jack Daniels.
No.
So, I don't know. It's okay. I think what's more interesting is I want to bring it right to the local, because we talked about polling at the beginning. I have some insider information on that I got through some sources on polling for Ken Sim in Vancouver.
Okay.
So apparently, this is a poll that I heard about. Ken Sim, the polling that I'm seeing, that I've been told, is Ken Sim is actually polling as less popular at this point in his term than Kennedy Stewart was before his last election. So, and that
was wasn't me freezing. That wasn't my signal freezing. That was shock. Really?
It's not good. It's not good.
You have to say that, Anne. So Ken Sim Sim's current polling numbers are worse than Kennedy Stewart, his predecessor's, worst polling numbers?
At this time before he ran for office again. So about a year and a half out, right? And Kennedy Stewart actually, I think, could have won that election still, but, you know, he had a terrible campaign. But it's really unusual to lose as an incumbent.
He wrote a book called Decrim, as though it worked.
Yes.
I mean, come on. Nobody frustrated me more than that mayor, I feel.
Well, it begs the question, will Ken Sim run again? I don't know. You know,
I think so. Don't you think so?
I don't know. I wouldn't if I saw that. I'd be like, high five, and what's that beer drinking thing you did? The shotgun beer?
Whatever. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm out. Adios.
But then you look at the federal Liberal polling numbers, and it was down 30, and now it's down 7. Like, is there something that, what do you think, in your opinion, what do you think we can attribute those polling numbers to for Ken Sim? Like, why so unpopular?
Cringe, personality cringe, and the budgets are terrible. I mean, they've got 25% in budget. That's just, it's just the worst budgets I've ever seen in Vancouver. They are the worst budgets that's ever been conceived. And don't give me that thing about inflation and come on. Get your act together. What are you doing? I mean, there has been no change to anything as far as staffing. The whole green team are all in the city manager's office. We're talking hundreds of staff. Even Adrian Carr admitted to the fact there were hundreds of staff that are in the green department of the city. Hundreds. I mean, I don't know what they're doing, because frankly, you just create policy, and then developers and everybody's supposed to just follow that policy. What are you doing? Making sure, like, I don't even understand what these people are doing. And they all work from home now. So I'm with Donald Trump on that one. Government employees, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with all these government employees working from home. Like, get them back in the office, make sure they're doing their job. I'm sorry, but I'm with you on that one. I know that's a challenge for me. It's like, so now what happens is you just stop, certainly in my industry, you stop hiring local. When you go back to your point about hire local, hey, you know, right. By the way, listen to our podcast. It's locally made and produced and hosted locally.
Canadian by made.
Local. By local.
By local. Oh my God, so, that's been like, podcast.
You can't even hire, why bother hiring local if you don't have to anymore? It's brutal. So it's an interesting time. So I think he's in trouble.
I think that it should be noted, and we should keep track when we do say we agree with Donald Trump, because no, seriously, because as you pointed out, we have Trump supporters who watch and listen to this podcast, who believe that we have Trump derangement syndrome, that we could never see the good and the whatever. Listen, if this incoming now president, second term, makes change for the better, excellent. I'm struggling to find those things that don't involve lining the pockets of the ultra wealthy and really pumping the tires of the bro code white dudes. Like, they're, you know, taking away protections for the most vulnerable in the community is shocking to me. Like, even the prescription drug executive order, like rolling back what Biden did to try and cap what pharmaceutical companies could charge for things like insulin. There are families who are deciding whether they can have their medicine or that they can eat dinner or pay their rent or have heat on a winter's day. Like, these are the things that you and I are not impacted by this, but we do talk about it because we should talk about, you know, the greater good. But it also left me thinking, why don't we get strategically at the federal level and say, you know what, let's make those pharmaceuticals less expensive in Canada and have Americans come visit up here and buy them.
Well, I think that's what will happen. I think that was happening before Biden came along. And there's a black market that happens too, obviously. Especially,
but let's not make it a black market. That's unfortunate, right? Like, let's make it a... You know, I think Americans are going to want, many Americans are going to want to move to Canada. And I hope the scientists know that we will happily bring you in here.
How many scientists signed that petition? About, it was like 1,500 or something. I don't know what it was.
So many. But with one stroke of the pen yesterday, it was like 300,000 people. 300,000 people in the science and information around healthcare were out. I'm like, there's 300,000 people I'll happily take into this country, but we need houses. We need places for them to live. Oh, God, George, it's so stressful. Anyway, so you say, back to the mayor's office here, Ken Sim, low polling numbers,
obviously
lower than...
dissent within his own party. They're not united. They voted against the oil motion that came to council, which was crazy. The natural gas, which shocked almost everybody, couldn't get their act together to that. So clearly they have no caucus that's of any control by anybody, apparently. So, you know, that's, as I have always said, if you lose control of your caucus, you lose your election, basically. And it doesn't seem like he has any control of his caucus. He has terrible polling. He's cringy. And
when's the next municipal election? The by-election's April 5th, right?
Yeah, the election will be mid-October next year.
Next year.
Usually around my birthday. Celebration of me.
Usually. October 13th?
15th is my
15th,
birthday.
15th.
So I think it'll be the 16th or something, probably around there.
Park board.
What? Why are you doing that?
Sorry. I just had to throw it in there. I just had to put it.
Oh, I do have some intel on that, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Actually, they're not going to get approval. That they won't. It won't happen. But the premier is not going to do it. He doesn't
want to really? Park board stays?
Park board stays. He says just there is an interesting argument I heard, which was the legalities of it. So if the provincial government says, okay, you go ahead and move the control of the parks over to the city of Vancouver, then the First Nations, for example, will probably say, wait a minute, if you're going to move control of the parks, then you should move them over to us. And so it will create, I think, a major legal situation potentially that the First Nations would have a very good argument to make that if
sure.
they are if
and the might city, be good at protecting the parks.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's just creates a huge governance challenge. And I think it's going to be interesting how EB navigates that, because I think that's the legal information that's being spread around right now in Victoria. And it's an interesting argument I haven't heard before. I just found that out this week. And I'm thinking, that makes sense. You know, because you know me and you know how we feel about the park board. But Kent didn't have the opportunity, because he had control of it, to actually do some stuff. And instead, he created all this animosity. It's like, what are you doing? So it's not
They don't even talk to one another. We're paying for many layers of government. And another reason why our taxes in Vancouver are way up is because we've got bloat and still nothing can get done. You remember the hot dog issues that I was having? Couldn't get a permit to do that, to have a hot dog at Trafalgar Park. This is years ago. My now 6'3", 17-year-old was, I think, 7, 8, maybe, playing in Little League. That same permitting issue still exists today. It's bizarre. And it's even worse because Park Board and City don't even talk anymore because there's so much acrimony. So good luck in enjoying anything.
Yes.
This is a generational problem, a total generational problem.
Speaking of generation, my son, he just surpassed my other son's height this couple of weeks ago to Pierce's chagrin. He's like, you're 6'1"? Because Pierce is 6 foot exactly. Now Quinn's 6'1", and he's 16. And Pierce is like, he's not growing anymore. So it's over. You're now not taller. Your younger brother.
No, your little brother's going to be taller.
Meanwhile, I'm 6'2". I'm in my mind.
In my head. Oh, I know. My son puts his chin on top of my head. He's 6'3". It's ridiculous. Hey, listen, I do want to end as we wrap up. You mentioned Unspun Podcast, your Canadian political podcast by Canadians. We are Canadian and we will share Canadian news and views. Of course, we talk about international stuff as well, but unspunpodcast.com is where you can like and subscribe and find the YouTube video. If you often listen to us, you might want to see our funny looking faces. You can go to YouTube and watch George and I gesturing wildly as we talk here. And we try and do this each and every Thursday. It might be a little turbulent over the next couple of weeks. Well, starting February 8th anyway, because I'm doing Invictus Games. Super excited about that.
So your show is going to run on it's 11 o'clock and then again in the morning?
Yeah, 11 p.m. nightly on TSN. Always available on TSN Plus if you don't have regular cable or don't subscribe to TSN. But it's called Invictus Games, The Daily Show. Yes.
Canada's John Stewart.
Yeah, Jody's John. I've got Jonathan Edwards and JJ Chalmers, who are my co-hosts there. So really excited to have two very astute Brits joining me, or guys from the UK, I guess would be more accurate. But the two have covered Invictus Games for the last few. And so I'm excited to be the Vancouver part of it anyway. So we're doing
back
that. I'm back in the
game.
Sports.
Look,
I'm very, and not just sport, but adaptive sport. So if you don't know about Invictus Games, get to know about Invictus Games. I'm so proud to be a part of it. And even if you've never heard of it before and you want to watch the show, we'll educate you on what's happening. But it's really, really special and very positive in a time where the world is so negative. So Invictus Games Vancouver 2025.com is the website that you can go to and find out more about it. You can find you all the time on that social media platform that is more and more a cesspool every day at George.
Because of me? _
No, not because of you. At George _ Affleck, as always.
Underscore, not the Elon Musk overscore that he did at the inauguration. Let's not get into that.
No. Oh, we didn't even. No.
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 We'll leave that right there. At Jody Vance. At Jody Vance. Jody with a Y. At Jody Vance. And that's it for Unspun Podcast, the fastest 30 minutes in politics. Unspun.
Bye-bye.